Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 27th of January. The title of this article is New Breed of Shared Offices Revitalizes Co-working Market. The article was written for the journal by Peter Grant. A new breed of co-working is fueling an industry comeback. The shared workspace business was one of the hottest in commercial real estate a decade ago, tapping into a booming demand at the time for flexible workspace among small and mid-sized firms. By 2018, the industry leader WeWork occupied more Manhattan office space than any other company around. Then, co-working got leveled by the office market's downturn once the pandemic upended demand for corporate space. Some of the industry's largest players at the time were forced to seek bankruptcy protection, including WeWork, back in 2023. Now, as companies are adopting a mix of office and remote work, co-working is again one of the fastest growing segments of the office market. Economic uncertainty out there and the rise of artificial intelligence are compelling more companies to embrace flexibility for their workspace. This time, it isn't only the smaller firms or entrepreneurs flocking to these shared conference rooms and cubicles. Some of the world's largest companies today are jumping in on the co-working bandwagon, including Pfizer, Amazon.com, JP Morgan Chase, Lyft, and Anthropic. Once we go into a market, one of the first things we do is look for a co-working space, said Will Monahan, who is Global Head of Corporate Real Estate for WTW, formerly Willis Towers Watson, a commercial insurance advisory and brokerage with 350 offices worldwide. And co-working 2.0 is increasingly dominated by single-size operators as well, rather than behemoths such as WeWork, which at its peak had more than 800 locations globally. Today, co-working space in the United States totals 158.3 million square feet in nearly 8,900 locations. That is still down considerably from the years before the pandemic hit. But according to data firm Yardi, that number is up from 115.6 million in about 5,800 locations 3 years ago. Shared offices allow employers to avoid long-term leases, adjust space quickly, and offer employees the same amenities that they use to lure weak workers back into headquarters. Companies say short-term flexible co-working helps them to create satellite offices closer to where the employees live. Those spaces allow the workers to capture the benefits of in-office work, collaboration, mentoring, and access to amenities without the time and the expense of long commutes to headquarters. Currently, co-working accounts for 2.2% of U.S. office stock, up from 1.7% 3 years ago. Eventually, that percentage could grow up to 10%, Yardi predicts. Look at occupier surveys, says William Sanford, who is Yardi's director of co-working. 40 to 50% say that 20% to 30% of their corporate portfolios will be flexible leases. The U.S. co-working business started to grow in the late 2000s as startups and freelancers sought flexible alternatives to traditional office leases. As the expansion accelerated, real estate executives touted it as a game changer to their business. Tishman Speyer Chief Executive Rob Speyer said in 2019 that co-working may be the biggest disruption to real estate since the invention of the elevator. Much of co-workers' expansion today is from smaller, independently operated locations. Single-site operators have grown 66% in the past 3 years to over 3,500 locations, according to Yardi, which is double the rate of the top 20 operators. Independent operators today are helping local companies in small and mid-sized cities adapt to hybrid work. In Buffalo, New York, Uniland Development converted a former truck parts warehouse 6 years ago into Hansa Workspace, a 32,000 square foot co-working facility. Uniland initially expected demand for its suite space to come largely from growing companies seeking additional office space. Instead, most larger tenants have been firms looking for short-term, flexible space as they emerged from the pandemic and reduced their footprints to accommodate more remote work. It's predominantly foiling that are downsizing from traditional offices, said Erin Fontenot, who is Hansa's community manager. Industrious, a larger working firm, had a big growth spurt last year after CBRE Group acquired a controlling stake. The deal gave the co-working firm access to a long roster of corporate tenants and building owners connected to its new owner, the world's largest commercial real estate services firm. Industrious added more than 50 locations last year for a total of over 250 in the U.S. and Europe. Much of its recent growth has come from large companies seeking small satellite offices, often with fewer than 100 employees, that offer amenities comparable to those at corporate headquarters. Before the remote work era, companies could get away with providing their workers in satellite space little more than basic desks, conference rooms, and maybe break areas, and limited common space and food and beverage service. But today, remote workers are livid about it if you force them back to the office, and it's only a crappy experience, said Jamie Hodari, who is Industrious co-founder, who is now a top executive at CBRE. WeWork helped to propel the co-working model into the mainstream, transforming co-working from a niche concept into a global office brand, led by its flamboyant CEO, Adam Neumann. But WeWork's rapid expansion, fueled by long-term lease obligations, heavy capital spending, and optimistic assumptions about demand, left that company vulnerable to slow periods. And now the company is taking smaller spaces and sometimes sharing risk with building owners. We're not going to take stuff that's going to choke you if it doesn't fill up right away, said John Santora, who is WeWork's CEO, who took over back in 2024 when the company emerged from bankruptcy protection with Yardi as its controlling shareholder. The next article I'd like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 20th of January. White-collar workers should not dismiss a blue-collar career shift. Struggling with a career slump? Don't let status and labels get in the way of an opportunity. This was written for the journal by Callum Borchers, who writes many articles on careers for the journal. Could your pride handle working in construction, security, or at an auto body shop? The best way to get over your mid-career slump just might be to get over yourself first. Layoffs and stagnant wages have a lot of white-collar workers feeling stuck these days. I hear constantly from people who have applied to 100 or more desk jobs without luck. Meanwhile, blue-collar industries face a labor shortage. Pivoting to something more hands-on or to an industry outside of traditional white-collar havens, such as tech, finance, media, marketing, is an option many professionals today don't consider. That is even though the jobs and industries are generally less vulnerable to artificial intelligence, the earning potential is often comparable, and the work-life balance is frequently better. I know. It takes years to master a trade and make good money at it. Starting in your 30s or 40s leaves a short window before your back and knees give out. A bruised ego isn't the only obstacle to a career change. To get paid at the level I need, I think I would have to get certified as a journeyman electrician or something like that, said Justin Johnson, who is 47, who lost his $130,000 job as a software project manager when a government contract ended last year. That would be very difficult to do because I'm the breadwinner in our household, and you get accustomed to a certain lifestyle. For someone like Johnson, switching industries would likely require an initial step back money-wise, but in a blue-collar job market being reshaped by technology and private equity, there are faster routes to six-figure paychecks than learning a skilled trade, ones that are easier on the joints, too. No sweat. Crash champions a car repair chain with about 650 shops in 38 states is hungry for service advisors. The role involves assessing damage, estimating the cost to fix it, and overseeing the process. You don't need to sweat under the hood. You just need to know a lot about cars. For those who don't, there is a six-month apprenticeship program. The starting salary is roughly $60,000. That would be a pay cut for many white-collar workers today, but service advisors can double their salaries in 18 months' time, says Chief Executive Officer Matt Ebert. He adds that this job is often a path to becoming the general manager of a shop and eventually a director in charge of several locations. Directors make more than $200,000 a year. New hires can reach that level in a matter of years, not decades. This is because Crash Champions is among a slew of blue-collar businesses to attract private equity investments in recent years. A company that had 13 locations in 2019 is growing so rapidly that employees tend to be promoted quickly. Still, converting people from offices to garages is a challenge. Some of it is the stigma, says Ebert, who, like 83% of his team, did not earn a degree. For someone who went to college, heading in a new direction like this is almost like admitting defeat, and it takes a little bit of courage to do that. Transferable skills. It took courage and a dearth of options to alter Asher Raphael's course. With no other job offers out there after college, he accepted a sales position at Power Home Remodeling, thinking he would stay for a year and then go to law school. 23 years later, he is still there as a co-CEO. The company is now PE-backed with 4,700 employees and $1.73 billion of revenue last year. He says a key to growth is avoiding the things that customers hate about dealing with contractors. These include poor communication and an inability to stick to deadlines or budgets. In short, a lack of professionalism. So professional types are ideal hires. We've been focused on getting a higher caliber person to work for us than would typically work in our space, Raphael says. He adds that someone who works in tech sales earning $85,000 to $100,000 a year could make a lateral move to Power Home Remodeling. A 10-week craftsmanship academy brings new hires up to speed. But the company generally has better luck recruiting Gen Zers, who some have branded the tool belt generation because they are wary of college debt and AI's potential to replace entry-level office jobs. The share of workers in their early 20s who are employed in blue-collar roles rose to 18.4% in 2024 from 16.3% in 2019, according to the payroll software company ADP. This increase was five times the uptick among 35 to 39-year-olds. Experienced workers have been slower to recognize job market shifts that create new roles in construction and similar industries. This is a missed opportunity because a lot of the open roles call for management and technology skills, the very things an office veteran could bring to the table, says ADP Industry Executive Kit Dickinson. Those who wince at the idea of a blue-collar career change do not necessarily look down on people who work with their hands. Sometimes the resistance is more about a sunk cost mindset, says Amy Glasser, who is Senior Vice President of Business Operations at the recruiting firm Adecco. After shelling out for college and amassing years of experience, it is natural to fixate on jobs in your one field to justify those investments. But a blue-collar turn can be temporary. Academic and office credentials might prove useful once again in the future. For example, they could be an asset in the upper ranks of specialized, a security firm. Managers and executives at that company can earn $100,000 to $500,000 a year. Getting there requires at least a brief stint as a frontline security officer to build credibility as a leader. Typical starting pay for unarmed guards people without military or police backgrounds is about $25 to $25 an hour and is pegged to a living wage calculator for each location. CEO Vince Caraba, who dropped out of college himself, argues that people make too much of professional distinctions. "I hate using white collar and blue collar," he says. "What will these terms even mean in 5 years?" The line does seem blurry when we're talking about a construction company employee who sticks to sales or a car repair service advisor whose principal tool is a tablet instead of a wrench. Career changes are never easy, but this is no time to let status and labels get in the way of the right long-term move. The next article that I would like to read for you was also in the Wall Street Journal. This one was from the issue of January 22nd. Many MBAs hit challenging market. This article was written for the journal by Lindsay Ellis. While elite business schools today are seeing a hiring rebound, many other top schools find their graduates are facing months-long searches. Just how difficult is it to get a foothold in today's professional job market? It is taking many of America's most credentialed business school graduates months to land and accept offers. With companies scrutinizing every white-collar hire, the job market for MBAs has sputtered for more than a year now. That is weakening a reliable catapult into executive-track jobs that can pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. Though there were hiring rebounds at some of the most elite programs, including Harvard and Columbia Universities, hiring from many top-tier business schools remains below pre-pandemic levels. At Duke University's UQA School of Business, for example, 21% of job seekers were still looking for work 3 months after graduating last summer. About 15% of those at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business remained on the hunt. Those rates are similar to 2024, but sharply higher than 2019, when many employers could not hire enough white-collar professionals. Just 5% of job-seeking MBAs graduating from Duke then were still looking for work 3 months at post-graduation, and at Michigan that year it was 4%. John Bush, who is 33 years of age, earned his MBA in May from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He initially sought finance jobs in New York, but widened his net to banks in Charlotte, North Carolina. He now is also considering luxury retail after spending time in Paris. One role he did apply for in retail had an annual salary of $80,000, less than what he earned before going to business school. It might be worth it, though, Bush said. The U.S. added an average of about 49,000 jobs a month in 2025, the lowest pace of growth in more than two decades outside the two most recent recessions. Most were in health services, not what business school graduates widely pursue. And graduates faced steep competition as layoffs drew hundreds of thousands of workers into the job market. Students were having a rough time, said Terry Parker De Leon, Fuqua's executive director for its Career Management Center. The school connected graduates with one another and with coaches to strategize on searching. Companies often set MBA hiring targets months before graduation season and make offers long before graduates will join the payroll. That advanced planning was especially challenging this past year, employers and campus career officials said, as companies contended with an on and off again global trade war and the implications of artificial intelligence. At Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, a quarter of the MBAs were still looking for work 3 months after graduating, up from about 16% the year before and 8% back in 2019. Two factors especially did not help, said Christine Murray, managing director of the Career Center. More than half of the school's 2025 MBA graduates were international students, many of whom faced visa uncertainty. And the Washington, D.C. labor market was flooded following federal cuts. The last 2 years have just been really terrible, she said. This fall, the school is rolling out a new curriculum emphasizing career readiness, shaped with input from employers. Some business schools say dialing up networking efforts and training students in artificial intelligence improved their hiring outcomes this past year. At Columbia Business School, 10% of their graduates were still looking for jobs 3 months after graduation, down from recent years. A surge in hiring from Boston College Consulting Group, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Amazon contributed to the decrease, school data show. So did more than 200 companies hiring from the school for the first time. Harvard Business School said it is deploying AI to help match its MBAs with openings from multiple job search sites and with alumni who work at those companies. That, plus leaning on alumni and faculty to coach students in their searches, helped MBAs get hired, said Tezdal Neely, chair of the MBA program. Fewer HBS graduates were looking for work 3 months after graduation compared with the prior year, 16% versus 23%, though at a higher rate than before COVID-19. It's a changing world out there, and we need to mobilize to support our students, Neely said. By late November, all but 10% had accepted jobs, and half of those graduates had received offers, the school said. Harvard Business School graduate Daniel Alves de Quintal, said he networked extensively and asked professors to connect him with former students or colleagues working at the consulting firms he was targeting. Top schools open their doors, but they don't walk you through them, the 29-year-old from Portugal said. He joined BCG in New York after graduation, pitching himself as a no-brainer hire who had won promotions before and wanted to stay in consulting long-term. I'm not just selling only on potential, I'm selling on performance. Alexis Rooney, who graduated from Harvard last spring, said she leaded on a six-person virtual job search team with fellow graduates that HBS organized. One helpful tip she picked up from someone in the group: write a case study or other work sample to get another look, even after a rejection. The rejection is just a no, you could turn it into a yes, Rooney said. She is pursuing product marketing and marketing strategy jobs, and while she has gotten interviews, they have not yet turned into offers. It has been hard for her to compete against job candidates who recently were laid off from that exact position, she said. Heather Byrne, managing director of the Career Development Office at Michigan's Ross School, said some students are finding more opportunity at smaller or mid-sized companies. Once bigger companies understand how AI will impact their organizational charts, she expects their hiring uncertainty to ease. But that could take years, she said. The people who are patient and who continue to network and are appropriately flexible and adaptable with their expectations will be the ones who will do well, Byrne said. This is all the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.